Thank you very much. Let me just try to get this adjusted, since you're going to be hearing so much from me. it's a real pleasure to be here, really, and I'd like to thank Dr. Wang Peng for inviting me, giving me the opportunity. I was actually in the hospital a couple of days ago and had an endoscopy Tuesday morning, but it was normal and I was fine, and so was on my way. don't want to have any misunderstanding that I'm doing this by myself, because there's nobody else who has anything important to say about the design of clinical trials. It's really not that at all. It's just that sort of an opportunity for me to come here and sort of give you, tell you about some things I have been doing, and I'll touch on some things I did some years ago, and also some of the things I've been doing more recently. I've been involved in clinical trials for many years, and then about 10 years ago, I actually didn't start off as a statistician. I started off with a doctorate in applied math and computer science, and I was interested sort of in biological modeling, and I wound up in the National Cancer Institute and the Clinical Center, really coming there because Vince DeVita was interested in working with me to do biological modeling. But once I got my office in the Clinical Center, and I shared an office with a guy at that time named Ron Yankee, who was in charge of the platelet transfusions, and I was a mathematician, but they needed a statistician, and that was close enough. And so I was sort of inundated with a lot of statistical issues, a lot of really smart young oncologists around, it was a very, very exciting place to be. And I met Dr. Wing Peng at that time, and there was a large statistical group branch at that time in the Cancer Institute, but they were off in some other building, and I was right there in the hospital. So I was the one who actually was asked to help and got exposed to a lot of problems. And I think, sort of looking back at it, that's sort of been the important thing for me, is that I've been involved in a lot of real problems and sort of been sort of on the front line and seen the problems early and was able to sort of work on them and also find some time to try to figure out better ways of solving those problems. And anyway, sort of always being right, very much involved in research, in clinical research, has been very important to me. I wound up working in the area of cancer clinical trials for many years, and then about 1998, I saw, well, the opportunity looked like the time was now ripe with the genome. Human Genome Project, to maybe get back to doing some biological modeling. And so at that time, I actually took a lot of courses and spent a lot of time in the lab and learning biotechnology techniques, just so I knew it firsthand. And actually then got involved very much in microarrays, both analyzing microarray data and trying to develop new methods for how to analyze that data, and developing some software for making my ideas available to others for analyzing that data. And now for the last couple of years, I've been trying to sort of meld together somewhat those two experiences, the experience with trying to utilize high dimensional genomic data in a way that we actually wind up with better drugs to develop, and using them in a way in the context of clinical trials for trying to figure out what patients actually might benefit from what, from which drugs. And sort of that sort of melding of those two kinds of experiences is a lot of what I'll talk about today. Is the sound okay? Is it too loud, or do I need to move it away, or is it okay? Okay. On this first slide, I think the most important thing that I'd like to make available is this website. I've gotten very website-oriented, and whenever I give a talk, I generally put the PowerPoint presentation on that website. And there's a lot of reprints of my papers on that website. And so even sometimes when I give a talk, I digitally record the talk, which I'm actually doing right now on my little recorder. And then if it actually works out okay, I put the sound file on the website. This is actually the... It's a screenshot of the main page of the website, but actually I have an internet. Let me go back. I have an. Let's see here. I actually have a live internet going on here, and that actually is the website. And so on the website, there's a bunch of icons, and one of them is this technical reports and talks. And if you click on that, what actually is called technical reports, some of them are technical reports, but some of them are actually PDF reprints of papers. And if you just click on a paper, you'll get the PDF downloaded to you. And some of them are things we even submitted for publications but haven't had accepted yet, like that last one. And then there's a thing on talks, and that's where I post the PowerPoint files. And more recently, on some of these talks, I actually post the audio file. If you click on the talk, you get a download of either the PowerPoint or a PDF of those slides, and if you click on the audio, you get a digital file. I think it's, and you just click on that, and you may have to unzip it, and you can listen to those talks. Okay, back to my slides. And there's another thing on here which I'll be discussing, which says sample size calculations. I'll get back to that in a little bit. Okay. My talk is going to be organized in sort of, first I'm going to talk about phase one issues, and then I'm going to talk about phase two issues, then probably we'll take a break, and then after that I'll talk about phase three issues. And most of what I have to say will really be about phase three issues, but there's some material, I guess, about phase one and phase two to be discussed. Traditionally, of course, well, I guess nowadays the objective of the phase one trial is to develop a dose and schedule and to determine whether the drug inhibits a targeted pathway for a molecularly targeted drug. Basically, in phase three, we think we find out whether a drug really has clinical utility for a defined kind of patient. And in phase one and two is really just where we decide what drugs we're going to do phase three trials on, and how we're going to do them, what the regimens will be like, what the doses will be like, and what the patient populations will be like. And so the phase one and two really is my traditional way of thinking, just a way of deciding where we should do our phase three trials and how we should do it. And traditionally, of course, for phase one, the focus was on the first part here, develop dose and schedule. And now with molecularly targeted drugs, we also, I think, would like to determine whether the drug is doing pharmacologically what we think it's supposed to be doing. Ideally, I think what we would like to be doing with molecularly targeted drugs is to have a drug and a target that's so specific for a cancer cell that the drug can be delivered repeatedly at high enough doses that they completely shut down that deregulated pathway without toxicity to normal cells. Right now, for example, if we have a, you know, there's the BRAF gene is mutated, looks like it's mutated in about 60% of melanomas. And so I think there's a lot of interest in developing an inhibitor of mutated BRAF, a drug, and I think a lot of companies are trying, are developing such inhibitors. And if you developed a drug that was very specific for the mutated form of that protein, then that drug shouldn't have any off-target effects, and you should be able to deliver it and really shut down that MEK pathway in the cancer cells. Whether that would do anything for whether that would have clinical utility, you'd have to find out. But it would certainly simplify phase one, phase two, and how you would do your phase three trial, because you would sort of, you know what to measure, whether you're, about whether you're having, your drug is having its intended effect. You wouldn't have to worry very much about dose, and you would be able to figure out whether it's a dose you use, that it does have that pharmacologic effect. And you would also have a natural built-in diagnostic for which patients to treat in your phase three trial. It would be the patients who have mutated BRAF. Most current, what we call molecularly targeted drugs, are not nearly that specific. In fact, most of them are toxic because they're not so specific. And I think many of our problems in drug development come from the fact, start right here, with the fact that we don't really have, for most kinds of cancers, we don't know what might be, if the BRAF mutation turns out to be, enable us to effectively treat melanoma, then that would be great, but we don't know about things like the BRAF mutation, which is a very early mutation in melanoma. We don't know about those for most kinds of cancer drugs. So we wind up treating with drugs that are molecularly targeted, but they're still not really very specific. We wind up using targets which we don't really know that they represent the oncogenic mutations which make that tumor a tumor. And consequently, many of these drugs actually fail. Because in a tumor, once you have a sort of a proliferating tumor, many genes are going to be overexpressed, and in some subclones they'll be selected for if they provide a survival advantage or an advantage for evasion. And there will be many proteins whose expression looks different than in normal cells, but they really won't represent good molecular targets for really curing the patient. And so when we talk about why do drugs fail, I think they mostly fail because we don't really know the right targets. If we know the right targets, then we have a large pharmaceutical industry that, at least for overexpressed targets, can develop inhibitors. There are other issues with tumor suppressor genes, but for oncogene type effects, developing drugs to inhibit known targets are relatively straightforward. So now, I guess other things to think about when we talk about phase one is that although sometimes people talk about optimizing the dose of a drug to maximize its pharmacologic effect, I think there are relatively few examples of drugs whose effectiveness at inhibiting the target actually decreases after a maximum. You know, where you have some kind of a curve where, as a function of dose, the inhibition would go up and then come back down. And so you really have to explore the dose response curve to know what dose you should be using. Certainly, if you use too low a dose, we have lots of examples where you won't be effectively inhibiting a target, but very, very few examples where the inhibition comes down. Optimizing the dose for maximum inhibition of a target is difficult clinically. It's easier to do in tissue cultures or with mice, but it's difficult clinically due to assay variability and either the need for tumor biopsies or the use of some surrogate tissue. But you might take the point of view that if we really don't believe that the inhibition is going to come down after the maximum, then maybe we don't really need to be optimizing the dose for maximum inhibition. Particularly when you combine it with the observation that most of the molecular targeted drugs we're developing are not sufficiently specific for tumors, and so they're toxic. So one approach, and I think it's the approach I'm often recommending here, is to do sort of a traditional phase one trial, which you find out what is the maximum tolerated dose, and then to see if you just go a bit below that so that you can deliver the drug repeatedly, whether you get adequate inhibition of the target at that dose, rather than using the measurement of tumor inhibition at all doses as you go up and trying to optimize as you go. Now, titrating dose to achieve a pre-specified plasma concentration at which the target is inhibited in some preclinical system, that is more feasible. It's if we really knew what, but then of course you're always making the assumption that you have that the plasma concentration at which you would inhibit the target in the experimental preclinical system is the same as in humans, and that kind of an assumption has always limited the use of the approach of optimizing plasma concentration. So, as I just said, one approach is to determine